Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Welcome back to the Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. This week, we have another fabulous show with another fabulous guest. We'll be welcoming back Margaret Kimberly. Margaret Kimberly writes a weekly column, Margaret Kimberly's Freedom Writer, for the Black Agenda Report. And we all love the Black Agenda Report. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Margaret Kimberly. Margaret Kimberly, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you, Cindy. It's great to be back.
Well, thank you. I know my listeners are familiar with the Black Agenda Report and with your work, but can you just briefly tell us a little bit about it for those who may not be familiar with it?
Sure. BlackAgendaReport.com is a 10-year-old internet magazine. And as we say, we give news and analysis from a black left perspective, and we mean left. We don't mean Democrat. Mm-hmm. People would say it's radical. I'll accept that. Mm-hmm. And that means we are opposed to the Democratic Party and to Barack Obama. We did not change our tune because someone who looked like us was the new president. And write about, I think we're the only news magazine for writing about issues involving the African diaspora, where we have all original reporting. We do link to what other people do, but we are primarily doing original reporting on subjects domestic and international.
Right, and many of us on the left have really appreciated the principled stand you've taken against really the imperialism, fascism, racism, and so many things that have really taken a back seat since, not just since Obama's become president, but since about 2007, when the Democrats regained the majority in Congress. It seemed like all of a sudden many things that were very, protested so much when Bush when the Republicans were in power, seemed to just not be so important anymore.
Well, yeah, it's like we have nothing to show for the first 2 years of Obama's term. He was president, Democratic majorities in both houses of Congress. And we were told that, that's all we needed, and Democrats could do anything they wanted. Uh-huh. And if anybody questions or criticizes, all we're told is, look at Obamacare. And that's it. And Obamacare is problematic. It enshrines the profit motive in health care, which is the problem with American health care. And the fact that it's attacked by the right wing so relentlessly does not mean that it's a good thing.
Right.
The Democrats can't even, for example, now because of mass action from workers, all claim they want the minimum wage to be $15 an hour. Well, they had a chance to make the minimum wage anything they wanted in 2009, the federal minimum wage went up a grand total of 70 cents with Democrats in office. So
incredible.
Wars continue regardless of whether there's a Democrat or Republican in the White House, and Democrats protect and defend a Democratic president and do not present any critique, any analysis, any opposition. It's you have to go with him, and the Republicans are so mean. So everybody's silent, and I feel like we're worse off, frankly, when we have Democratic presidents because people just shut themselves down.
Well, what has been so frustrating to me lately And the reason I invited you back on was because you wrote an article about it. It's not frustrating to me that people are out protesting Trump. I think people should be. I think people should be out protesting Clinton. I think people should be out protesting Sanders. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if people cared about, you know, imperialism, if people cared about these wars, if people cared about brown people being murdered all over the world, they would be out very strongly, like they have been protesting Trump. They'd be out protesting Clinton and Sanders, too. But Trump actually hasn't really, from an official position in the U.S. government, killed anybody. So you wrote an article called Who's the Fascist? And so that's why I invited you on, because it puts so well into words what's been frustrating me lately.
Yeah, the word fascist is overused.
Right.
Anyone that people find objectionable in some way, they call a fascist. And I just want to say, I believe Trump is a racist. I believe the people who love him are drawn to the fact that he is open, makes that open appeal to white nationalism. And I don't have a problem with people objecting to or protesting him.
Right.
But I called my article Who's a Fascist because I wondered what you just brought up. It doesn't matter what Obama or any previous Democratic or Republican presidents have done, no matter how awful, no matter how many people they kill. It doesn't seem to matter. They're never called fascists. I had a laundry list of countries where American presidents or U.S. allies have killed people. It ranges from Serbia and Kosovo to Somalia and Iran and Libya and Pakistan and Grenada and Haiti, and the list goes on and on and on. And I said, you know, what do you have to do to be a fascist, to be called a fascist?
Right.
We are told that, you know, Obama, he was a constitutional law professor. Well, apparently he forgot everything he taught because he has made more of an assault on our civil liberties than even Bush did. We still have the Patriot Act. They strengthened the Patriot Act. He goes after whistleblowers with the Espionage Act, something from Woodrow Wilson's era that was scarcely used until he came to office. The way Edward Snowden was treated. Edward Snowden was seeking asylum, which was his right under domestic and international law. But it was violated in an effort to snatch him up because he spilled the beans. The kill list, the assassinations. There's no legislation, no case law, nothing that says an American president has the right to declare somebody an enemy combatant and kill them. Bush didn't claim the right to kill people. He claimed the right to imprison people. Mm-hmm. Obama took it one step further and killed Anwar al-Awlaki and his son. But Congress didn't say anything. The corporate media didn't say anything. The attorney general made public statements about some how due process doesn't mean what we seem to think it means.
Mm-hmm.
So if that isn't fascism, I don't know what is. It's a part of a larger problem where the anti-war protests during the Bush era were more anti-Republican than they were really anti-war. And Obama marketed himself as an anti-war candidate, and that silenced people who call themselves leftist or progressive. And they've remained largely silent to this day.
Well, absolutely. And, so Trump has, for sure, like you said, he is appealing to the lowest denominator of some segments of our society with his rhetoric. But Obama has deported more immigrant workers than in any other president before him. People aren't burning things down at his rallies or his public appearances.
Absolutely, and they should be. He's the number one border. He's the number one killer. The mass incarceration state has not diminished at all on his watch. He does pretend things like, you know, he'll make a documentary and he'll pardon, like, you know, 10 or 20 people or however many. And he could have given the people sentenced to prison under the draconian crack cocaine sentencing rules, He could have given them the right to request resentencing, but he denied it. And that's the sort of thing he does, and he gets away with it. I remember when Reagan was president, people said he had Teflon. He could get away with anything, right. And nothing stuck to him. Well, oh, he has nothing on Obama. So, yes, people should be protesting him about any number of issues. Trump's most guilty of being boorish and classless and graceless and not hiding his racism. There's no doubt in my mind that Hillary Clinton is equally racist. I am convinced of that. She doesn't say so, but he comes out and says it. And so that is his biggest crime, is not silencing his racism, not hiding it, or his misogyny, or any of the other things. He's a, you know, the worst of all possible worlds. He's born into a rich family, never did anything else, and got away with saying and doing whatever he wanted to do. And it shows. And that's nobody I want to be the president or even a, you know, guest at a dinner party. Right. But it's not a reason to say that someone is actually a fascist. And in some ways, he's so unpredictable, it's hard to say what he would really do. But he's to the left of Hillary Clinton on foreign policy. He has said what somebody ought to say. Why does the United States have to run the whole world? Why do we spend so much money on NATO? His emphasis is on money. It's not my politics.
Right.
So we have to make Russia an enemy. And by the way, the United States, Obama's, it seems, is trying his best to start World War III with NATO putting troops in the countries along Russia's border. And Trump has questioned why that should be done. Trump has said, I'm not going to cut Social Security. And Democrats are always trying to get away with doing that. He said the minimum wage should be higher. So that's not something that would make me vote for him. I, as a black person especially, I'm uncomfortable with someone who is so attractive to rednecks. And rednecks aren't necessarily, you know, meth heads living in trailer parks. Rednecks can wear suits and ties and work on Wall Street. But that mentality, right, who's so right. attractive to people of that mentality, it would be difficult for me to overlook that. But he is not worse than Bill Clinton or Barack Obama. Bill Clinton ended welfare as a right. Welfare was an entitlement for 60 years until Bill Clinton did away with it. Mm-hmm. Something that Republicans fantasized about, a Democrat actually did. So that's the sort of thing that people need to remember in concluding that the real thing is this duopoly, which is so toxic. It needs to go, and the Democratic Party needs to go. It needs to be destroyed. And a lesser evil, and Bernie's better than Hillary, and I guess he is, but it's kind of damning with faint praise. But he doesn't really want to do anything radical. He's not really a socialist. He keeps saying that he'll endorse her if she gets the nomination instead of him. So that's not the answer. The answer is for the Democratic Party to be done. And the first step is to stop voting for them, not to be traumatized by Gore losing to Bush in 2000, but to realize that these people, the Democratic Party, does not have our interests in mind. And we aren't even on their agenda. And the sooner they go, the better off we will be.
Absolutely. The thing that like really gets me is, first of all, I think that this election is just bizarre. But you know, people are saying it's that the election shows that people here in the United States are tired of business as usual because Trump has taken the Republican nomination and Sanders is putting up a fight for the Democratic nomination. But I really think that Sanders wouldn't be doing as well as he is if he hadn't re-registered a Democrat, and if he hadn't been promising all along that he's there not to destroy the Democratic Party, but to make it better. And right. So I think that his candidacy reflects more of a bent towards the status quo than Trump's, for sure.
Yes, it does. Trump has blown up the Republican Party. it's pretty clear that the rank and file Republicans and independents who end up voting Republican in presidential elections, they had no allegiance to the Republican Party platform of the trade deals. And somebody should attack these trade deals. Americans have lost jobs because of them. Mm-hmm. That's one of the ways in which he is to the left of Democratic leadership, who push these horrible things on us and the rest of the world. So yes, absolutely. White working class people are losing out. Excuse me. And so they were looking. Of course, they were attracted to someone who was a celebrity, first of all, they knew who he was, and who said the things that they felt. And I'm not going to necessarily criticize someone because they want a president who says, we've got to stop these trade deals. That actually does make sense. So all the things that Republicans, you know, smaller government and lower taxes and all these things that Republicans want, it's very clear millions of their voters didn't really care. And so they were attracted to Republicans because of an unspoken, I believe, an unspoken racism. There's always, as we say at Black Agenda Report, a white people's party. And at one time it was the Democrats of the segregated South, but for the past 40 years or so it's been the Republicans. That, I think, was the appeal of the Republican Party and not anything they were selling. So, and Trump has proven that. So I think it's a good thing for the Republican Party to be imploding, and we need to make sure the same thing happens with the Democrats, because Hillary Clinton is already doing is moving to the right, and she's going to try to attract those Republicans who just can't stomach Trump. But what does that say for the Democratic Party? What will the Democratic Party be?
Right.
It'll be more right-wing than it is now. I've always said, before this year, I said we have a far-right party and a center-right party. And the Democrats won't even be center-right if Hillary Clinton gets in. So she's already making those appeals, and we'll see it anymore in a general election campaign.
I love how you said that when Clinton said, you made a Facebook status, Clinton said something about if Trump gets in, the Kremlin's going to love it. And you're like, yay, that would be wonderful.
It would be. I was half joking.
Right.
They're risking world. I'm not exaggerating this.
Right.
This, you know, peacemaker president, and he's, you know, Obama's going on this, I call it his imperialism tour. So he goes to Hiroshima and meets atomic bomb survivors and hugs this old guy. And
terrible.
But he is building more nuclear warheads right. than any other president and putting them right on Russia's border. So the Russians would be happy if Trump were president. But as far as foreign policy is concerned, I'd be happier if somebody who espoused that point of view could become president. So yes, the manipulations and the outright lies and propaganda that we've been given about Russia is just horrendous, and it shows how the corporate media, especially the foreign policy, just follows the White House line. It doesn't matter who's in the White House. The New York Times will say we need to attack Iraq when Bush is president, and now they repeat the caricatures of Putin that are used to dehumanize him and the Russians. So should the day come that there is not just a cold war, but a hot war, that Americans will be in favor of it.
Well, and it's just funny that the so-called socialist Bernie Sanders and, you know, Hillary Clinton, who represents, like you said, we used to be able to consider it maybe the center party, but now it's center-right. You know, mm-hmm. but many people think she's liberal. How they have engaged in red baiting. When Sanders called Hugo Chavez the dead communist dictator.
Yeah.
In one of his things. So they're supposed to be so left, and they're actually participating in this propaganda, which isn't surprising.
No. And Sanders says the same thing. We've got to contain Putin's aggression. It's not Putin's the one who's aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Western nations have been encroaching on Russia for the past 20 years, adding NATO members and instigating a coup in Ukraine. So Putin's been defensive and reactive. The ones who need to be contained are the ones in Washington and in London and Paris. But so yeah, it's like Sanders, first of all, doesn't seem that interested in foreign policy. Initially, his campaign website didn't say anything about foreign policy.
Right.
But then when he started talking about it, he's saying the same thing, and he'll say something like, you know, Palestinians deserve dignity. Well, no, they need their land back. They need an end to occupation. They need to stop being killed by Israel. But he never goes that far. He supports the same things Hillary does. He is not as mendacious as she is. But unfortunately, the other thing I don't like about Sanders, I don't even think he wants to win.
Right.
He could have made a big deal. The first debate, he says, I don't want to talk about these emails. That's a big story.
Right.
The Secretary of State was clearly trying to hide something by using a personal email to do State Department business. That Clinton Fund or Clinton Initiative, whatever it is a cesspool of influence peddling. And I'm convinced that's what she was hiding. But if you're trying to beat someone, why wouldn't you bring that up? Why wouldn't you make that an issue? So, I've got issues. I'm not feeling the burn at all for a variety of reasons.
I told someone if they were still feeling the burn, they have penicillin for that. They could go take something. So your colleague Bruce Dixon said, I don't know, maybe over a year ago, that Sanders was a sheep herder for the Democratic Party. Now we're closer to the DNC, the convention in Philly in July. And what do you see happening? I think, do you just like foresee what usually happens? The people fight really hard for their so-called, different candidate, the savior. They fight really hard for them, and they swear they're not going to vote for or support the other person if they're the nominee. What do you foresee happening? Will all of these Sandernistas just flow seamlessly into the Clinton camp after she gets a nomination?
It's hard to say how many will. Some will, but I think some will stay out. I don't know if they'll vote for Trump. I think they will. Some will stay home,
mm-hmm.
vote for the Green Party, and the likely candidate Jill Stein. But I don't think people are going to follow as readily as they used to. I think there will be an attempt to get them there, and I think Sanders will. You know, we took a lot of heat for calling him the sheepdog, and people got very mad at why you're saying that, and blah, you know. But so far, he's proven us correct.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to say how many people. I don't think it will be as many people as have done so in the past, as when Jesse Jackson ran, or Dennis Kucinich, or other people on the left wing of the Democratic Party. I don't think it's going to be so seamless this time. But I think Sanders will end up doing what we predicted.
But even if it's Trump? It is Trump. And so I think, I don't even want to guess the percentage. I think at least 90% are going to be. And I think many of these people, Margaret, are supporting Sanders in the primaries until they get to the voting booth, and then they vote for Clinton.
Yeah, I think it's going to be hard for people. They're already raising the, Ralph Nader cost Gore the White House, and it's only June.
Right.
So between now and November, that drumbeat will get louder and louder from these, late night comedians, what's his name, Colbert, apparently did some routine about, you don't want to be like Nader in 2000.
Jeez.
Robert Reich saying, vote your conscience, but really don't vote your conscience. Just fall in line and vote for Hillary. So I think that pressure is going to be there. But I think it remains to be seen. I think there'll be more people who will just say to heck with it and not go along. But it's hard to predict the number.
Right. I just want to shift gears a little bit because I told you I wanted to talk about that article and other things. I spent the weekend with a very good friend of mine, David Swanson,
mm-hmm.
and we did some events. We did like three events. And David has a book, War is a Lie, and David's a pacifist, and that's the only thing that we disagree about, you know, because I'm not a pacifist. I believe in liberation struggles, and I even believe in armed liberation struggles. But I went to your Facebook page, and I don't ever remember, did you just put up that picture of Robert and Mabel Williams on your...
Oh, I've had it on my bed for a while.
Yeah. I just noticed it. I watched the documentary, Negroes with Guns, and I read his book after I watched the documentary. And can you tell my listeners about him? Because to me, I was so inspired by that documentary. I couldn't even tell you. And I'm very ashamed because up until I watched it, I had never heard of him.
Well, he's one of many people that we should all know more about.
Absolutely.
He was in the 60s. He is a man who advocated self-defense. And this was at the time that King was advocating nonviolence. And so as hard as it was at that time, he and, you know, if you look at my the cover photo of my timeline page, it's a photo from his book of the Williamses holding guns. And he ended up leaving the country for a while. He lived in China. He lived in Cuba. He came back to the United States where he passed away. But he always talked about self-defense, and hence the title of his book, Negroes with Guns. And it was that sort of activism that I think he predated, actually, the Black Panther Party.
Yes.
The Black Panther Party for Self-Defense,
mm-hmm.
Which was successful, which was why it was destroyed by the COINTEL program by J. Edgar Hoover, who used a variety of techniques, getting people to snitch, creating conflicts, killing people, getting people to kill each other, because they were so popular, and because people were behind them in the struggle for self-defense and to fight for, literally fight for justice and for change. So, yes, I think it's an important distinction. When I first started writing and first started my activism, it was during the days leading up to the invasion of Iraq. And at the time, I was an anti-war person.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put it this way. I'm against the U.S. intervening in the affairs of other countries.
Right.
But... I believe in the right of other people to defend themselves and of countries to defend themselves. A lot of people on the left are, in the case of Syria, for example, they say, well, I'm not pro-Assad. And I'm like, well, I am. I don't live in Syria. I don't know what it's like to live under his government, but he has a right to defend his country. It's a sovereign nation, and for him to just give up and give the bully his lunch money,
right,
and let the U.S. and their allies among the Gulf states and NATO just say, okay, you can have my country, is wrong. I'll just use the word wrong. And it's a good thing that he has held out. It's a good thing that Russia finally came to his aid. And I will always defend nations who defend themselves from attack by the U.S.
And we should, as, you know, revolutionaries, we should be in solidarity with those struggles.
Everyone's not a revolutionary, and I think that's the difference.
What?
Everyone's not a revolutionary.
Right. Right.
Some people just want a little change, nibbling around the edges, let's reform things, but
yeah.
To call oneself a revolutionary is not something that a lot of people who are anti-U.S. wars are willing to...
Well, you know, my son was killed in Iraq by somebody trying to defend his country, trying to get the U.S. out, and I support that struggle, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's just really, it's hard, but it's just a fact of life. But with Robert and Mabel Williams, in Monroe, North Carolina, was, I believe, one of the only places where there were no lynchings, because the Black community was armed, and
yeah.
It reminds me of the U.S. doesn't really attack people that have nukes.
Oh, absolutely. That's why they didn't want Iran to have any nuclear
right.
capability. But now I'm concern, because now they're messing with Russia, which, and China, mm-hmm. definitely have nukes. And I feel like it's, I call it the final f*** up. Mm-hmm. But they destroy, Israel destroyed Saddam Hussein's nuclear capabilities. So of course, and who is to decide? Who is to say, we can have nukes, but you can't? And look what happened to Gaddafi. He gave up, he was trying to get some nuclear capability and gave it up. So you see what happened to him. He was murdered on screen, and Hillary Clinton cackled about it.
Laughed about it, yeah.
So, of course, nations want nukes. It would be, you know, we've gone backwards. Reagan and Gorbachev worked to try to end, to get rid of nuclear arsenals, to reduce them. And now we're going in the opposite direction. Bush abrogated, there was a missile defense treaty with Russia. And he just unilaterally said, we're not following this anymore. We're going to have as many nukes as we want in Europe. So, but, you know, and yet Putin is the one called the bad guy.
Right. It's crazy. So, Margaret, we're actually out of time. Can you tell my listeners where they can find your work?
Sure. BlackAgendaReport.com. I'm on Twitter. @FreedomRideBlog is my handle. I have a blog which is mostly reprints of talks and interviews like this, freedomrider.blogspot.com. And I urge your listeners to especially to check out Black Agenda Report.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I'm afraid. It's a funny thing. I never felt this sense of peril about the world.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about and should talk about climate change, which is another disaster. But I'm not sure if humanity will kill itself with climate change or with nuclear war, and that's my biggest concern right now. But I think I want people to really come to the realization they cannot vote for the Democrats. Whoever that person is in November, we cannot vote for the Democratic Party. They are a huge part of our problem. They have to go. We cannot be afraid. It's time to move on and talk about doing things differently.
Right. I mean, really being as aggressive as the Obama regime is being to Russia and China is literally insane.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's... The other thing that frightens me is that the corporate media, because it helps the establishment tell its lies, even people who make the effort to be informed still don't know. If you read the New York Times or Washington Post every day, you don't know anything about Russia. All you know are the official lies about Russia.
Right.
And I think with the Democrat, they are even more willing to follow without question and to promote... policies of war making. So that's what's on my mind.
Well, without like reading Obama's mind, what's the end game? What is this aggression to Russia about? Is it about oil? Is it about power? Is it about other resources?
It's all of the above. It's mm-hmm. it's part of the, you know, others are more well-versed in this than I am, about the collapse of capitalism and the need to destroy any rivals and to make certain that the world is, you're either, Bush used to say, you're with us or you're against us. Well, that's the Obama doctrine, too. And that is why he continues the policy of destroying secular states in the Middle East and using jihadists, by the way. ISIS, they're not trying to, in the current Black Agenda Report, Glenn Ford has an excellent article about the fact that the United States isn't fighting ISIS because we use jihadists as foot soldiers to undermine regimes in that part of the world. So it's about being able to steal more efficiently, to make sure that the price of oil falls so Venezuela goes under, so Russia, the ruble falls, so Iran can't defend its economy. So all of those things are part of it, and it's like the evil end game. I guess that's what it is. to sum it up.
Yeah, I already said goodbye, but do you have a couple more minutes?
Yes, I do. Yes.
Okay. It doesn't really matter how long. I try to keep it to 30 minutes, but it doesn't matter. Cynthia McKinney, I interviewed her several years ago, and she thinks I respect Cynthia. I'm not sure if some of the things she says might be more conspiracy oriented, but she said that she believed that Obama was groomed to be where he is today. Like, he was somebody who wasn't, like you've talked about and we've talked about today, not somebody who is against the status quo or system, but somebody who was brought up in it and, almost indoctrinated to be here, to be the kinder, gentler face of empire, to be able to push the agenda through, not the black agenda, but the corporate, global, capitalist, imperialist agenda.
Well, he's at bottom a conservative person. He talks openly about his admiration for Reagan, for example. And I think he was uniquely placed being biracial. And lest we forget, he does not have the life of most black Americans. He does not share our history. His father was an immigrant, and he didn't even have contact with his father. So he was a black man raised by white people and raised in a foreign country. So I think black people are strangers to him, and I think he holds us in contempt. But he benefits from looking like us. Mm-hmm. He gets, there are some, white liberalish people who will give him a pass. It's like, oh, he's a black man. Oh, but he's exotic. He's, not one of ours. As I used to say in the segregated South, not one of our Negroes. So but black people circle around him because even so, the most racist white people still hate him. So he's in this unique position, and I'm not sure when he realized that he had it, but I think he wanted to be president for a very long time. I think there was some luck involved, as in, Carol Moseley Braun losing that seat in Illinois. His opponent being embroiled in a scandal, which helped him to win. So there was some, good luck for him. But it's something he's been angling for a long time. And, I know people say his mother was a CIA agent and raised him to be in the CIA. I don't know about all of that. Mm-hmm. But I think he was uniquely placed to rise above racism as much as anyone can in order to become president of the United States. I mean, he's a very smart person, not in a good way. I mean, writing his autobiographies, you get it all out in the open. You just tell everybody years before, and that makes things easier on you when you decide to run for higher office. So I think it's something he's been angling for a long time.
Not smart, but clever. And here, yes. Here we might have to contend, Margaret, with the first woman president. And if we oppose her, then what are we, sexist or misogynist? Or
they're trying to do that. Fortunately, it went over like a lead balloon when Madeleine Albright said there's a place in hell for women who don't support Hillary. And you haven't seen her at a campaign event since.
No.
So that didn't go over very well. I guess it gives her some reservoir of support. I would say there are people who are excited at the prospect of having the first woman president, but she's a horror. She's absolutely awful. She's a bad liar. She's a pathological liar. She's very ham-fisted, unlike Obama, who is... smooth with his wrongdoing. She's very obvious about it. I mean, all you have to do is look at her history to see that she would, for somebody to enter office, most of them get worse once they get into office, but she goes into office proving herself to be a liar, proving herself to be extremely bloodthirsty. So it's very dangerous for her to be president, and Trump is the perfect foil for her because he does help her silence people. Because the first thing, if you say, I don't like Hillary, the first thing, what do they say? Do you want Trump?
Right.
Are you going to vote for Trump?
Right.
So it's bad, and she is going to round up those Republicans who don't vote for him to push the Democratic Party further to the right, and it's going to be an absolute disaster.
Well, Margaret, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and the show will be out on Sunday, and I'll send you the link, and you can pass it around. But thanks for your work and for sticking to your principles, and we'll have an interesting summer, won't we?
We certainly will, and thank you, Cindy, for your years of leadership. You're an important person.
Well, have a
nice
have a,
too.
Have a good weekend.
You too.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's the Soapbox for this week. As always, I hope you were informed and inspired to check out more. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar. I'd like to thank Margaret Kimberly, like I said, for her work and her continuing adherence to principles. And I'd like to thank you for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.